podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello there and welcome to 1865. This is our Forest Ramble monthly discussion show and we are joining you at the end of March 2022. So, thank you for joining us. In today's show, we're going to be covering a number of things. We're going to have some reflections upon what's been going on the pitch, both in terms of the Cup and the League. And we're going to think about how Forest are doing in terms of their squad depth as we hit the business end of the season. We're also going to talk about the improved atmosphere at the City Ground and how much this is contributing to the success of the team and vice versa. We'll also be referring to the club Q&A that was recently held, and we'll be talking about things off the pitch as well. And we'll also hear from our friend Jeremy Davis with his sketch, and we'll have another game of Guess That Red. Anyway, without further ado, let's introduce this month's panel. So, greetings to you, Stephen Toplis.
Hello.
Hello to Tom Newton.
Hello all.
And welcome to Baz.
Hello.
Hi there. Now, Baz, I'm going to start with you because it's a week on since we all kind of basked in the glory, but the oh-so-near feeling of the Liverpool match. Now, I felt that what we managed to do quite well was to show in the FA Cup run that even though they're one-off matches, actually Forest showed that they've got quite a lot about them. And if they were somehow to go up this season, we wouldn't just be pushovers at Premier League level, would we?
As long as we can keep it, sustain it over a long period of time. As you say, it's one-off matches. It's very easy to get yourself fired up for a one-off match. It's doing it over 38 or however many. However, the one thing that I didn't notice last week that I noticed this week is when you look back on Steve Cooper's post-match interview, the very first thing he says, we didn't win, which that gives me a lot of hope for the future, just in that one answer.
Okay. But Stephen, let's just riff on that just for a second, because we've heard a lot about, and we've talked a lot about that whole idea of processes versus outcomes. And Steve Cooper does seem quite process-driven in his interview so far. So is this a sign that actually, you know what, he's just like any other manager and he realises that results are everything?
Yeah, I think he's somebody who values giving it 100% every minute of every game. And just seeing what happens. You might not be the best team on the pitch in terms of ability or value, as we're not against Liverpool because they are operating in a different, almost a different stratosphere to Forest, given their status and Champions League top four team, all that kind of thing. But you just have a go. And on the day, I think Steve Cooper is quite pragmatic in the sense of there's 11 of you on the pitch. There's 11 of them on the pitch. Give it a go and just see how you do. We've got our game plan and we'll play it out. And why not believe that you can win the game? Because stranger things have happened. And I like that about Steve Cooper. This belief that we can go into any game believing we can win. Doesn't matter if it's say, you know, Barnsley at home or Liverpool. That belief is still there, and that confidence in the team that we can go out, give any side a good game and possibly pick up a result as well. It's refreshing, and I think it's a mentality that's been missing from the club for a very long time.
And Tom, just to go on that theme of 100% in every minute of every game. So Cooper took a few unkind comments coming from South Wales after he left the club because the style of play wasn't what Swansea fans wanted, especially in that second season. But does that cement the idea that that's because Cooper was working with what he had to work with? And if you give him the right tools, he can create a team that's not only successful, but also actually quite fun to watch.
Pretty much. And I've gone on record on this pod before saying that Swansea have had Michael Laudrup and Brendan Rodgers playing in a certain way. And because they've had Premier League football, feel that's the norm, and then Steve Cooper's come in and he hasn't took him back to the Premier League, and then obviously the negatives have obviously been thrown his way regarding how, and I think it's a sense of a bit of jealousy really, because they probably think he's going to do well at Forest, and he has been doing well. So I think it's a case of that and the old cliche of be careful what you wish for.
Controversial there, Tom. If there happen to be any Swansea fans listening, and frankly, why would they be? But you do have a right to reply. So contact us via Twitter at @Nottingham_Forest. Or tweet Tom that. Directly.
Yeah, no, I'm off Twitter now after I've said that.
I'll put it
in Welsh, then I won't be able to respond because I won't understand. So
let's come back to the league, because I think we all felt a sense of pride in what could have been in the cup match, but of course in the league that's the bread and butter. So as things stand in the international week, we are in ninth position in the table. We've played 36 matches and have 58 points, but there's two, three games on hand on some of the teams who are above us. And if we win two games in hand over Luton Town, who are, by the way, I think it's worth saying, are absolutely awesome this season. But if we win those two games in hand over Luton, then we will be in third position in the table. Now, Baz, I'm just going to come back to you, because for weeks, you know, this time last month we were discussing the Bournemouth postponement, and for weeks we're saying, well, actually, we're going to need to hope that Bournemouth are on the beach by that stage. Going away to Bournemouth is going to be a tricky match. But it's if it's the last week of the season, then Bournemouth, if they're promoted, it might make it a little bit easier for us. And you know what? Now I'm thinking that match against Bournemouth in the last week of the season could be a six-pointer to try and get second place in the table. What do you think, Baz?
You have to think back to where we were in September, which is we could be on for relegation here, and just getting to the mid-table would be a lucky escape. I think it would be nice to get automatic promotion, but just getting to the playoffs, I think, would be such an achievement in itself that I'm not going to look beyond that.
Okay. And Tom, just to come to you on this one, because the idea about going back to September when we were bottom of the league and steadfastly bottom of the league as well, I'm just thinking, yeah, we'd all have taken mid-table. Some of us would have said, oh, if we get the playoffs, that would be an absolute bonus. Some of us still think that. What are your thoughts and expectations at this stage?
Everything at the moment is a bonus in terms of having a shout of getting into the playoffs. But if we got into the playoffs, then the opportunity is there. You're technically, three games away from the Premier League. And why you've got that chance and how the financial restraints are regarding the football club against parachute payments, while they've got that opportunity, it's a match of going for it. Because it's already hard enough for us to compete against teams coming down from the Premier League. So, like I said, while we've got that opportunity, go for it. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen, because like we've said, it's a bonus. But if it does happen, what an unbelievable achievement that Steve Cooper might achieve something what no manager has done since Dave Bassett in 1997-98.
Okay, I'm going to come back to something you just said in just a minute. But before I do, Stephen, funnily enough, Tom's used the phrase, oh, if we get to that position, we need to try and take that chance. And I was having a discussion with Brady from the Huddersfield podcast, and he takes that chance when we had our FA Cup match. And we were both saying that given how brilliantly bonkers the Championship is and how competitive it is, in a way, the ideal situation surely is to finish third in the league, get to the playoff final every season, then lose on penalties and glorious ignominy, so you don't have to deal with the upset of being in the Premier League and getting beaten pretty much every week. Or am I being too cynical?
It'd be nice to be up there for a little bit, surely. It's been that long, and the club, I think, a good example, actually, is looking back at the Liverpool game. Look at the atmosphere. Look at the excitement around the ground that we were playing a team of Liverpool stature. And you just think the atmosphere, the displays that Forza Garibaldi arranged, absolutely brilliant. You think, God, surely this club's got to be in the Premier League. The way that the fans are taking to these big games and the excitement and the buzz that it generates, it just, yeah, it would be incredible. It'd be incredible for the city. And I think as well, not to sound too big-headed, but I think we would be a real addition to the Premier League in that sense, because the fans have been waiting for it a long time. The atmosphere's there. There's obviously history as well going back. But I just feel like the club is ready to embrace Premier League football and what that can bring. And we don't want to get too carried away, because nothing's guaranteed yet. But if we can get up there and into the Premier League, it would be incredible. It really would. And yeah, it's just nice to be in with a shout at this end of the season. If you'd have said to me in September we'd be here, I'd have probably laughed at you. So yeah, let's just embrace it and see what happens.
Baz, we'll talk about atmosphere in its own right in a little while, but you wanted to jump in there.
Well, yeah, so I'm saying we need to be sensible and remember where we've come from and everything. But I'm also, most of us on this podcast are pretty old. And so I can remember when we went up under Frank Clark and then finished above Liverpool in the first season up again. So that could happen as well, which would be amazing, finishing above Liverpool.
Well, there you go then. So those are the ambitions set out there. If we don't go up, isn't there a danger we're going to lose half of our first team?
Yes. But also, I'm reminded earlier today that I have set a reminder on my phone, which was from October, which was to ask Stephen in a year's time, because he said some comment about Steve Cooper being our manager for years to come or something like that. And I was like, right, I need to follow him up on that. But the thing I've always said is you can't tell about a manager until the tough times happen. And with Sabri, he didn't pass the test. You could say the same for Aitor Karanka. He sort of waltzed out. Steve Cooper's not been through that yet. So that's going to be the real thing, is what happens when, yeah, we lose the likes of, if we don't go up and we do lose Johnson and Worrell and maybe a couple of others, and we have a really, really sticky start, a dodgy November again or something like that, then how's he going to cope, and how's the rest of the club going to cope, and how are we going to rally around him? And that's the real question. And we've not had even an inkling of how he would react when he's really under pressure.
Okay. Does his time at Swansea, when he had to sell quite a lot of his, or that he lost quite a lot of his players from that first playoff season, does that give any indication, do you think?
I think the Swansea fans would say, yes, he battened down the hatches and played dour football that wasn't quite good enough. But it's circumstances, isn't it? It's the culture of the club, the atmosphere, the time, the place, and everything else comes together at the same time. Aitor Karanka walked out twice, so maybe that's his personality. But what Sabri, I don't know, actually. Sabri actually is whatever, Rennes side, they collapsed a bit, didn't they? Mm-hmm. So maybe it is, and maybe that's what we will see if it happens. And there will be a bad run at some point, and the pressure will be on. So it would be interesting to see how he does react there.
Okay, so same thing to you then, Tom, which is history does tend to repeat itself with managers, doesn't it? And using those examples, Karanka, he had a big mard at Middlesbrough and almost walked out, and that happened twice at Forest. Sabri, he had a really good sort of 8 or 9 months in charge at Rennes, and then it all fell apart and he ended up losing his job, and then the same thing happened at Forest. So when times get tough, firstly, will times get tough for Cooper? Because is Forest a different place to work now than it was even 6-8 months ago? And then secondly, do you have faith that if times do get tough, that Cooper will be all right?
The mentality's changed in 8 months of where it was and what he's instilled. I think the hard times will come, but they'll probably be when we're in the Premier League.
Oh, them's fighting words.
I like that.
Yeah. Okay. And Stephen, we're going to talk about the boardroom a little bit later, but just very briefly, do you think the fact that Cooper is now working for a club that is being run by Dane Murphy, and where the main administrator is, what's his name, Tamor Rushdie. Do these things give you a bit more faith?
Yeah, fills me with a lot more confidence. It seems as if the football side of the club is much more professionally run. People who know what they're doing in the right jobs, and having those kind of football people in quotation marks, it gives you that perspective that when things perhaps aren't going to plan, or the manager makes a certain decision, setting up the team in a certain way or making a certain substitution, you don't lose your mind and ask him what on earth is he thinking, and why have you not done this, you've not done that. You trust in the process and you trust in the manager that you've put in there. And in the, what is it, 7 or 8 months since Cooper and Murphy have worked together, I think we've seen a really strong relationship form. And if you look at the, for example, the players who have come in, I mean, it's the one area perhaps where we can measure success in terms of hit or miss. You look at the players who have been brought in, and they're making an impact. Sam Surridge, who for the money spent on him looks like a really, really astute signing. Keenan Davis, who's been excellent. Steve Cook, a really worthwhile addition to the back line, who might fall outside of the Dane Murphy kind of money ball system, if you like, but they've identified his leadership and the qualities that he can bring. And we've seen that already in the few months that he's been in charge. So those signs there of real progress in terms of transfers from, say, the people who were in before, fills me with confidence. And that's before you even get to the football side of things on the pitch, the tactical improvements, the mentality as well of the team. The team just looks like it's playing with so much confidence and belief, and players are embracing being part of it as well, that they're enjoying being part of a promotion challenge. They're enjoying the challenge of taking on Arsenal, Leicester, Liverpool in the FA Cup, and they're rising to it. And that's another big thing as well. I think when that stability is there behind the scenes, creates a good mentality around the club, and the players in particular, I think, can really buy into that. And that's what we're starting to see. Such has been the transformation in the last few months. It's easy to forget that it only is a few months, really, that Dane Murphy and Cooper have been in their roles. So, yeah, I'm just excited to see what happens next and how they can build on this great start.
Mm. Now, Baz, you and I have been going to matches and following Forest, like you say, for a very long time. And is it fair to say that in the kind of the last, let's say, last 25 years, that actually, from the outside looking in, because that's all we are really as fans, we're looking in from the outside, but this feels like the most stable the club has been for much of that last 25 years. We had Nigel Doughty's long tenure and ownership, but this feels like the first time in that time that Forest are being strategic, don't you think?
Yeah, it's the first, like, both you and I have said before, we loved Nigel Doughty for what he tried to do for the club and the way he went about it, but it never felt like there was a vision behind it. It did feel quite a bit reactive, right? We've got this. This is a trouble. Now we're going to suddenly, out of nowhere, around the back of the sofa, find £2.5 million for David Johnson, and all that sort of stuff. And that was kind of the way it was. Whereas this feels much more like, right, this is the blueprint. Now let's put it into action. And so, like we're saying, Steve Cook might not fit the Barnes, the Moneyball style by Young sort of thing, but there was a lack of leadership in the team. They identified that. They went out and found someone to fill that gap, which does feel like the right way to do things. And it feels like, yeah, we're making steps in the right way. It's not just for this season. It's a longer term project.
Mm. And Tom,
dare I say it, a 5-year plan.
Wow. Well, funnily enough, we are actually obviously 5 years this summer since Evangelos Marinakis took over the club. Mm. And so the fact that we may be reaching 4 to 5 years might explain why there was a change of direction. Who knows? We will never know. Tom, just let's think about the managers who've, where it looks as though they potentially could have threatened success at Forest in the last few years. So we've got Billy Davis, we've got Aitor Karanka, we've got Sabri Lamouchi. This is different, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like Billy Davis, he was just, like he says, he's one press conference away from just chucking a hand grenade on himself. Karanka was just like too emotional, and if he didn't get, he was like a mini Mourinho. Karanka was. He was like Mourinho's little protege. If he didn't get his own way, he was like, that's it, I'm down on tools, I'm off. He did it at Middlesbrough where he disappeared for 2 days. Then he turned up and says, I'm your manager still. And he's come to us and didn't get this, that and the other. And then he's gone to Birmingham, and it's obviously that's nosedive there. So, and Sabri, he's a bit like Mark Warburton. You win a game of football, and when the going got a bit tough, and you just didn't have a plan B. And if you look at the games, it was very much one goal in it most of the time. And sometimes we did get a bit lucky under Sabri. But now under Steve Cooper, it's like his mentality is very much 21st century in 21st century football, and everybody's buying into that. And like you've alluded to, it's the most stable the football club has been in the last 25 years, stability-wise.
Okay, and this takes me back to the Liverpool match in many ways, because I was saying to the Anfield Wrap podcast and also to our Liverpool fan, Johnny Shaw, about the modern breed of football manager. Steve Cooper feels like he's from that mould rather than from the old school. And I think it's fair to say that in their own ways, Karanka and Sabri were old school. Let's come back to matters on the pitch in terms of players. Stephen, we've got a little bit of an injury crisis, and the international break has probably come at a good time in the sense that Graben, Cook, McKenna, Lowe, they're all first-team players who are out injured for weeks rather than days, and we could do with them, couldn't we?
Yeah, you're looking there at essentially your back five, decimated with a couple of injuries, plus Graben obviously up front, even though we've filled that gap quite well with Keenan Davis and Sam Surridge contributing as they have. The worry about the defence is that we're losing elements of the team that have helped us to play so well this season. So that back three, with Spence and Lowe as the wing-backs pushing forward, that's been a really big part of our success. And it's given the team the foundation to play to their best. So, that is a concern that we're missing essentially two-thirds of that defence now. The bonuses with the international break, that's given us an extra week or two's recovery time. So hopefully we can get Cook and McKenna and Lowe back sooner rather than later. Whether this opens up an opportunity for, say, Jonathan Panzo after the international break to come in remains to be seen. But it has shown actually that a few injuries can still really hurt us, and we are going to struggle with those key players out. So Scott McKenna has been, just come on, Scott McKenna, I think he has been a massive loss for us because he's so consistent, almost to a point where he goes under the radar. You just expect solid performances from him week by week that you almost don't notice it. And I think we will miss him as much as anybody in the games that he's out for. And hopefully we can get him back and obviously Steve Cook and Lowe as well as soon as possible.
And just going back to a comment I made after the Liverpool match is that if we'd been playing with a back three and it'd been Scotty McKenna on Diogo Jota, then Forest wouldn't have conceded that goal. But playing in the back four meant that Colback had to come across, etc., etc. Baz, on that topic, we've talked about strategy a few minutes ago, and Stephen's just mentioned Jonathan Panzo, who we haven't even seen on the bench. So should we have any concern about the fact that the likes of Jonathan Panzo, Loic, we know Loic can play, and he's a decent defender, barely even gets on the bench. Richie Larrier has come in, and Cooper, when asked, has just said, well, he needs to acclimatise. It's a very different style of football, also very different, you know, environment for him, and so on and so forth. Should we have any concerns about the fact that those players are not even getting a look in, even when we've got 3/5 of our defence missing?
Just before I start, yeah, just to reiterate about McKenna, yeah, he's definitely my favourite player this season. He's absolutely outstanding. I think, and actually this comes back to the 21st century manager thing. I think one of the differences between these 21st century managers and the old school managers is about how they talk to the players and how they include the players in what they do. And it's like, you know, I've seen stuff about Graham Potter, where he will sit down with the players and say, right, this is the situation. How would you deal with it? And I've heard that Steve Cooper does the same thing. So I think a big part of it with that what that leads me to believe is that the players who don't have that philosophy or don't yet understand his philosophy, they don't get counted in the same way. So maybe it does take a bit of time for someone like Larrea, who's been in a completely different situation, to buy into how Steve Cooper wants him to play and how he wants him to make his decisions. Because that's what it comes down to, is when you're on the pitch, you have to make a decision at various points, and it's about making the right decisions. And if Steve Cooper doesn't trust them to make those right decisions, then it's probably worse than having someone who's less talented but makes the right decisions, if that makes sense.
Tom, any thoughts on that? Are you disappointed that, you know, when we've had Max Lowe out and we know that Larrea can play as a left wing back, are you disappointed that we've still been playing one of our better midfielders in the left wing-back position?
Yeah, slightly, because you would have thought, what, 3 months down the line that he would be able to acclimatise with how Steve Cooper wants to see him fit into our system. So, yeah, I am a bit surprised, but I'm not the manager, so I'll leave it up to the expertise of Steve Cooper and his staff to put players in when they're actually ready.
And just on that one, there was, I don't know if you saw the clip that went viral this weekend of Larrea playing for Canada. He made a brilliant run down the left wing. He got to the byline and he had to cut back into his right foot. So that is a bit of me just thinking, if that's typical of the way he plays, maybe it's just that Cooper doesn't want a right-footed player playing at fullback. Inverted wingers is one thing, but fullbacks playing on the wrong foot may be a different thing. So, you know, that's just speculation, isn't it?
Yeah, and another thing is that it's that cliche comes around in full circle. What Billy Davies used to say, was it round pegs in round holes rather than square pegs in round holes? So,
however, inverted wingbacks, that's how Chelsea play, so...
Well, okay, so what you're doing there is you're comparing Thomas Tuchel to Steve Cooper.
Yes. Well, we've already compared him to Klopp and Pep, so...
Okay, we'll leave that part there for the time being. In a moment, we'll be talking about the atmosphere at the City Ground, which is something that has got all of us excited. But for the meantime, we're going to hear from Jeremy.
You're listening to 1865, the Nottingham Forest podcast.
For nearly 4 decades, J&K Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started J&K Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. J&K Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
The 1865 Sketch by Jeremy Davis. There has been much understandable talk recently of the intersection of politics with sport. Whether it's David Cameron confusing Aston Villa with West Ham, Boris Johnson taking out Chinese schoolchildren in a game of touch rugby, or Chelsea fans chanting about Roman's Empire days after their former owner had unsuccessfully attempted to get the club off his books after failing to get off the hook for his links to Europe's latest warmonger, it's clear that football and politics, unlike business and pleasure, or Lampard and Gerrard, really do mix. Nottingham Forest Football Club itself is emblematic of sport as a political football, or at least our shirts are, the famous Garibaldi Red being a tribute to the Italian revolutionary hero of the same name, whose volunteers wore red shirts into battle because they couldn't afford uniforms. With such radical roots, it's perhaps ironic that the area was one of only four seats containing championship clubs to vote Tory at the last election, along with Reading, Stoke and Fulham. Karl Marx apparently dismissed Garibaldi as a pitiful donkey. Goodness knows we've had enough of those at Forest in recent decades. And it's Marx whose work and influence is frequently cited by both sides of the football culture wars that constitute political discourse within the game when there are no foreign wars to unite them. Taking the knee got a lot of men of a certain age extremely hot under the collar about a supposed Marxist conspiracy. But on the flip side, the Premier League, to which, lest we forget, our beloved club with its proudly radical roots is striving to return, has been described as the ultimate example of the fulfilment of Marx's prediction of the triumph of capitalism. To put it more succinctly, as Paul Routledge wrote in the Daily Mirror a few years ago, Marx argued that religion is the opium of the people, but that's only because he was writing in 1843 and didn't know about football. Sports washing is a relatively new term, but of course politicians have used sports as a soft power vehicle for thousands of years, from gladiatorial combat and chariot racing in ancient Rome to the forthcoming World Cup in Qatar. And here again, Nottingham was ahead of the game, if you'll pardon the pun, boasting one of the very oldest examples in British history, in the shape of the archery contest staged by the Sheriff of Nottingham in a scheme to entrap Robin Hood, who, for all his class warrior, rob from the rich, give to the poor heroism, basically enters in the hope of getting off with Maid Marian. A working class hero may be, but still one firmly entrenched in the conventions of the patriarchy. Whichever side of the political divide you stand, there's no doubt that when it comes to football clubs with a heritage born of seismic geopolitical shifts, with our links to Garibaldi, Forest yet again takes the biscuit.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. Great to hear your voice again, and we'll be having a little bit more from you a little bit later on. Now, let's talk about the atmosphere at the City Ground. There's a real feel-good factor at the ground at the moment, from Mullough Kintyre before kickoff through to Depeche Mode after the match. Before we go any further, let's just hear from Stuart Levy. Stuart is a fan who flew over from Germany to visit the City Ground last week.
Yeah, well, the atmosphere, I guess I'm going to be one of hundreds of your listeners saying it's the best we've ever heard. I mean, I've been a Forest fan since 98-99 when I was a kid, when we were last in the Prem. And yeah, I just cannot believe how loud it was. It's a lot of people in Germany don't really take an interest in the EFL, and to be fair, people in England don't really take an interest in the lower German leagues. But everyone I've shown my pre-game Mullough Kintyre clip to have been saying, how on earth is that not a Premier League club? So in terms of the game this year, and you see the clips on YouTube, Speaky Boy and all the stories from this year, they just can't get enough. The fact that nobody, even when we're midweek wins against, I don't know, Barnsley and QPR, nobody is leaving before the final whistle to wait for Stevie Cooper's fist bumps, and they just can't get enough.
Thank you very much, Stuart, for that insight into attending a game and comparing what the atmosphere is like on match day when you haven't been for a long time. Stuart's podcast called 21 for 21. They are podcast brothers to us on the Sports Social Network. So let's talk about atmosphere. I'm going to use the Reading match as my example here. It was a strange one because in the first half, Forest weren't playing that well. They scored the really early goal and they weren't playing that well. And so the atmosphere was a little bit quiet. But what was interesting is that, unlike in previous years, when we've not been that good, it's got a bit tetchy. And Tom, even when Forest aren't doing as well as you'd hope, the fans seem really, really positive at the moment, don't they?
They do. And it comes back to Steve Cooper again. It's like, you know, how the team plays, you know you're going to get an opportunity on the front foot in the match. In the previous regime, it's like we go, especially, I know it was an awful season, but under the Joe Kinnear, it's like Forest had like an okay first 5-10 minutes. The other team would score the goal and Forest would do nothing up until the 85th minute and thinking, oh, we've only got 5 minutes in this game, let's do something. But you just know under Steve Cooper that there's going to be an opportunity, and with the likes of Zinchenko playing, Johnson, Garner, Davis, etc., opportunities are going to come, and it, and how they play and how they play out the back with a bit of intensity, it is easy on the eye. So, and you can buy into it. You can see what's actually happening on a football pitch, which makes the spectacle a lot more easier compared to recent years.
Stephen, fans don't leave the ground anymore. The City ground. Even I think back to going to my first matches in about 1990 with my dad, and the fact that even then, even if there was things were going well, you'd get a bunch of people, 80 minutes or 85 minutes, a bunch of people would get up and walk towards the exits. And of course, I enjoyed having the last laugh when that happened not so long after I started going, because we were still there when Des Walker scored his goal and loads of other people weren't. But fans are not only staying till 90 minutes, they're staying till 95 because they want to stay and have a party and they want to see dance along to Depeche Mode, and they want to see Steve Cooper doing his fist pumps if we've won a match. I've never seen anything like it at City Ground, have you?
No, it's an incredible connection that's been built between the team and the supporters. And I think that's key, really, that you've got a manager who is so in tune with the club and so in tune with the supporters. And the team are on that same level as well. And it's just a joy to see so many fans staying behind, Depeche Mode playing, Steve Cooper giving it the fist bumps. It's been such a long time since we've had that kind of almost electric connection between the manager, the team and the supporters. Probably even since Brian Clough's era that has really been there with such warmth and such energy. And it's lovely to see. And taking it back to the football, you don't leave before the end of the game because there's a good chance you'll miss something. And it's been a long time since we've been able to really say that with confidence about a Forest team, that this team doesn't give up. They play until the very last whistle. And the most recent example for me was the Stoke City game where Samba's sent off in a moment of silliness. The penalty goes in. Forest are 2-1 down, 10 men, and yeah, probably not going to get anything from the game. And people were starting to fall out of the stadium. But those of us who stayed were rewarded with Ryan Yates thumping a header home in injury time. And it's 2-2, and suddenly it's almost like we've won the game. And it's brilliant to see. And then you add on top of that all of the away wins this season, which have come in the dying moments of the game. It's incredible. And it's just really nice to see after years of kind of mediocrity and a bit of probably, you know what, we can't be bothered with this. We'll support the team, but we're almost doing it more out of duty than enjoyment. We're really now getting
a chore, didn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry to butt in. It's like, you know, now you can't wait for the next game. And then a few seasons ago, it's like, oh, I've got, no disrespect to Preston, but Preston on a Tuesday night can't really be bothered to like rush home from work, get down to the ground, have like a dodgy burger and then watch like a crap performance, which is dominated by an awfully rubbish referee. So, but now everybody wants to be part of it. And that's the big difference.
Okay. And Baz, just to come to you, one thing that was very interesting is that the last couple of matches I've been to, 1865 Dad has actually said, oh, let's stay afterwards until Cooper goes around and do his fist pumps. And to anyone who knows 1865 Dad, that's pretty out of character in his personality when it comes to being a football fan.
In terms of, yeah, that sort of thing, you said the atmosphere, we've never seen anything like it at the City Ground. It is like an away game atmosphere. It's that incessant chanting, the belief, the pushing the team forwards that we're getting that we previously only saw at away games. And the only other time I've seen a manager connect like that, and we've spoken about this before, is when Billy Davis did the thing against Derby that time and came out and just yelled at us to give it some. That kind of thing, which Steve Cooper does every single week now, those were one-offs. And now it's a regular thing. And that's what's making the difference. It's happening every week. It's happening every game. It's brilliant.
And just staying with you, Baz, the other thing that sort of occurs to me is that Steve Cooper, there's that interview where he kind of he sort of said, oh, I'm falling in love with the place after he'd been here for a couple of months. Now, that's either the greatest PR stunt in the world, which he's managed to keep going, or it was there's something genuinely there. And I don't know what it is, but if it is just a PR stunt, then it feels very different to the way that Billy got the fans on side.
I saw an interview with Steve Cooper, and I can't remember where I saw it, where he said one of the things he likes to do is to get inside the head of the club. And he said he spent a lot of time doing research on Swansea to understand what they were about and what they were like. So that maybe is one of the things that he does. I can remember when Joe Kinnear came in and none of us really wanted him. But I can remember his first week, all the interviews he gave, he didn't put a foot wrong. The stuff he was saying was exactly what we wanted to hear. And then I think it was the Derby game came up and he said, oh, it's just another match. And it's like all that good PR, he just blew out of the water. That was PR. He was saying the right things for the right reasons. I don't know if that's the case for Steve Cooper. It doesn't come across as superficial as that with him.
Just a slightly different topic, separate but related. Whoever it was, I don't know if it was Mark Dennison, if it was the club's media department or whatever, whoever thought of putting on Just Can't Get Enough after the first match in the cup run, they just hit upon absolute gold, didn't they? Because suddenly, you know, everyone in a red shirt in Nottingham is the biggest Depeche Mode fan in history.
It's an absolute stroke of genius. And I think one of my favourite moments with that was the full-time whistle in the Derby match where there was a bit of a scuffle breaking out on the pitch with Samba and a few of the players, and everybody in the stands is just bouncing up and down to Just Can't Get Enough. It was brilliant.
Cafu was bouncing up and down as well, but in a different way.
Absolute moment of genius. One of those things, whoever decided to put it on in that moment has just created something brilliant. And culmination of Speaker Boy at Blackburn Rovers and even the Forest fans in Bournemouth on the night of the postponement, they were in a bar and it was being played and they're all bouncing and singing along to it. Brilliant to see.
Baz?
Well, I'm just wondering, he's not far off the kind of age where actually Depeche Mode probably would be one of his favourite bands. I wonder if it was his choice in the first place.
You reckon it's Stevie Cooper, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, in fairness, he doesn't go around dancing about on the pitch. It's the A block and the Lower Bridgeford that are doing it. But I mean, it could be, as Bob Ross would say, a happy accident. But even if it was just an accident, it's something that's really transformed the place. And one of the things that I found going to matches is that you want to win, not just for the joy of winning and getting the points on the board, but also because there's a bit of you, it's kind of looking forward to them playing the song and seeing the A block bouncing and being able to sing along and then Stevie Cooper coming around doing his fist pumps.
And just on the music front as well, the only other thing I can think of that's similar on a music front is we used to joke many, many years ago that it was Chris Bart Williams DJing that chose to have Born Slip when the team ran out. And yet that's, what, 20 years later and we're still using Born Slip and we still yell You Reds when those chords open up. So it could be the start of something there.
Football fans enjoying rituals. Who'd have thought it? Anyway, we do need to move on now from there. And there's a couple of things that I just want to touch upon very, very briefly. Tom, there was a fan Q&A, another one of these events where the cynic would say they're overly stage managed, but on the other hand, it gives an opportunity for some selected fans to go to the grounds to meet Steve Cooper, to ask him some questions and just generally find out what's going on. Firstly, are you in favour of these kinds of events? And then secondly, do you think we're getting the answers that we need, and just as importantly, are we asking the questions that we need to ask?
No and no. I don't want to be negative because of obviously all the positivity around, but no, I think the play it safe, and you can't blame the club for doing that in terms of the only vet certain questions, because there's still, even though with all the positivity around the club, there's still a lot of negatives there, and other podcasts have mentioned it, I just want a bit more hard-hitting questions rather than, why do you play 3-5-2, for example? I want something a bit more in-depth than that. And I think they do play it a bit safe in terms of what fans' questions are answered. It'd be nice to have, like, possibly Steve Cooper there, a couple of off the board, and it's like an open open invite kind of thing where anybody can kind of turn up on a ticket base. Like you release so many tickets, you can go there and you can actually answer your questions, what's being asked. I'd rather it been done like that rather than just like picking a certain questions from like an internet ballot, for example. I'd rather it be like an open forum and then you get the answers what everybody wants.
Call me ignorant, Tom, but how do they select who attends and which questions get asked?
No, it's just like, you know, how they've done it in the last one is, if you want to like the opportunity to come put your question in here. So obviously they see all the questions first from the people coming and they think, oh, that's a safe bet, that person can come. This is probably me just being cynical, but rather than like asking really hard, you know, say for example, I asked a really hard hitting question, which might be a bit critical of how the club is run, for example, they might think, well, we won't have that person, but somebody asking a certain question, which is a bit easy for them to answer, they might say that person can come. I'm like I said, I'm being cynical and probably being a bit over the top, but I'd rather it being an open forum where anybody can ask anything to a certain level, if you know what I mean.
Okay, and you think that there's questions on and off the pitch that are maybe being ignored. Now, we do have to move on to a slightly different off the pitch topic, which is, Baz, there has been an announcement in terms of the Forest Board of Directors, and that is that Kyriakos Direkas, I don't know if I've pronounced his name right, so apologies to Kyriakos if I haven't, he's joined the board. So the board is now Nicholas Randall QC, Dane Murphy, Yanis Francis, Johnny Owen and Kyriakos Direkas. And we saw a thread from Jordan Fellon, who is the founder of the Toronto Trickies and the president of the NFFC North America group of fans. It was quite a thoughtful thread, actually. So he made the point that actually Forrest have announced it rather than just it appearing on Companies House, as has happened before. He's also reckons that there's it's generally a positive thing because he's the director of football, so it makes sense for him to be involved at an executive level. But I don't know, does this make a big difference to the running of the club, Baz?
Well, I think that the Jordan guy, he makes the point in the thread at one point, which is, I don't really know, because there's so many people with titles like director of football or technical director or technical director of football technicalities and all that sort of thing. There is a job description that he posts at one point in the thread, but who's responsible for what? Where's the overlap? Why is he being brought in? What difference does he make? Where does his responsibilities start? Where do they end? We still don't know any of that. It is nice that they're being a little bit more transparent about it, but when Dane Murphy came in, we knew what he was going to bring to the table. And with this guy, I don't know. And I don't know how he fits in with all the other football director types in there.
Mm. Stephen, in that very same thread from Jordan, actually, our very own Tom Newton did actually make a response which picked up on something that Jordan said, which is that there's no fan representation, which is something that had been talked about. And yet, on the other hand, we see that Miltiadis Marinakis, Evangelos's son, he seems to be involved at the club on a regular basis, but he's not listed as having any kind of official role. So are there, from a governance point of view, are there things that as fans we should probably still be concerned about? Again, are there more questions than answers?
There probably are more questions than answers on the basis of, say, Marinakis's son. I mean, I've only really seen him posting videos from the aftermath of games, and he's enjoying the atmosphere and obviously the feel-good factor that's around Forest at the moment. But if you asked me what he did or what he does on a day-to-day basis, I couldn't tell you. So with that in mind, there probably does need to be a bit more clarity around these figures who are involved in the club and what exactly their roles and responsibilities are. And I think as well, we've probably had our fingers burnt before with Fawaz and absolute chaos of Fawaz and his cronies operating behind the scenes and dipping their fingers into pies that they probably shouldn't have been in the first place. So I think we're probably a bit on guard because of that previously. I think a bit more clarity would be good, and would just probably allow us to relax and enjoy what's going on the pitch without having to worry about what's going on off it. Because when you start throwing in all these new figures who might be having a say in football matters, that's when you start to worry about Dane Murphy and Steve Cooper, and would they start to feel pushed out, like, according to reports in the past, some managers have been pushed out by figures who perhaps shouldn't have been getting involved in football matters at Forest previously. Hopefully it's not as kind of drastic as that, and it's these people are working in the right areas where they need to be.
Tom?
Was Dourakis the appointment what sent Karanka in a mini meltdown back in 2018?
Allegedly, apparently, who knows?
Right, okay. We'll leave it at that then.
Okay. We were hoping to talk a little bit about the club's accounts, but we just haven't got time to do that. And I think that's something that is maybe a bigger picture thing. So we'll probably come back to that in a subsequent podcast. What I'd like to do now is to change tack entirely, because now it's time for a game of Guess That Red.
1865. Guess That Red.
Okay, so it's time for another game of Guess That Red. And this month, it's Jeremy Davis who is posing the questions here. Now, I'm going to be honest here. I know who the answer is. So I'm going to sit this one out and leave it to see if Stephen, Tom or Baz can guess which Forest player Jeremy is talking about.
This player was a left-sided international who played for Forest in two different divisions.
Steve.
Okay, we're not. Oh, go on.
John Robertson.
What bloody rubbish!
Is incorrect. Let's go back to Jeremy.
After leaving Forest, this player always got a bit of needle when he returned to Nottingham.
Go on.
Chris Commons.
It is Chris Commons.
What was it that made you think that then, Tom?
The one where he's played in two different leagues. No, it's the needle one, obviously.
Go on, elaborate.
Well, with the chant, what we still sing, even though he's been retired about 5 years, never gets old with some Forest fans, does it? So.
Well, actually, referring to needle... was actually referring to the fact that he allegedly has a Forest tattoo, and then he moved, of course, down the road. So that's what we're talking about. Let's just hear what the other clues were from Jeremy.
Despite having his share of big moments in Forest derby matches, this player might say it wasn't the biggest derby he played in. Lewis McGugan inherited this player's shirt number twice. Even if he were to get a knighthood, this player would never be at home with the Lords.
Well done to you, Tom, on winning that game. And this is our own little competition, so we hope you enjoy that, listeners. But now it's time for a competition that you can enter. Now, I put out a poll on Twitter recently, and it's asking you to think back about the last time that Forest were a Premier League team. And I asked, who was your 1990s Forest hero? The options I gave were Pearce, Collymore, Stone or other. And Stuart Pearce came out as quite a decisive winner. He got 62% of the vote. Stan Collymore got 32%, which means that poor Stevie Stone was there on only 3% of the vote. But there were a few other comments, including one from our very own Baz. And you like Collymore, but you had something else to add.
Collymore went off in a mard, basically. And after he'd given up on 60 minutes or whatever, he'd be substituted off and replaced by Jason Lee, who's one of the greatest players that's ever worn the red shirt, simply because he got 12 goals in less than a season by chasing down lost causes. He had very little talent, he had a great hairstyle, and he got 12 goals for just running very, very hard.
Yeah, and you also gave honorary mentions to some of the players who we'd absolutely love to have now. Players like Ian Wone, Colin Cooper, Lars and his ability to score direct from a corner. I mean, he was...
I used to think that was normal.
Well, yeah, and yeah, exactly. And of course, Jeremy has in the past talked about some of those great goals that Lars has scored as well. Other entries we had, so Dan Burke replied, as a 4 to 5 year old, 4 to 5, not 45, as a 4 to 5 year old, Stan Collymore was the first player I idolised, and he made me fall in love with football. And Dan, especially as a Nottingham native who'd moved to Cannock, so done the... probably saw Stan more often there than he would have done in Nottingham, in fairness. So we've had Dave, who've also said, in the brief Premier League era of the mid-90s, definitely Stan the man. What a team that was to take us to third place and back into Europe. But then Dave also adds in, Psycho was my all-time favourite. We've had Michael, who's also said, Psycho will always be my absolute hero, but those couple of years of having Stan in the team were fantastic. The best I've ever seen in our shirt, absolutely unplayable at times. Kentish Red has added in that those who made it look effortless, so another shout for Wone, Behenan, Brian Roy, Bart Williams. And then also the one that I kind of enjoyed was so there's two here. So one is from Paul Higgins, who said, Pierce's relationship with the fans is unrivaled, but I loved watching Collymore. But Des Walker was as good a player as any player I've seen. But then that also leads on to Welshy's comments. So Des Walker, although he left in the early 90s, so it's just on the cusp of this era that we're talking about, but he was the best English central defender, bar none. Rio, Campbell and Terry were nowhere near his level. Heading, tackling, speed, incredible. Massively underrated. And he also makes a point that Thiago Silva of Chelsea is very much like Des, and he's super fit, but he's economical. He knows the right things to do and how to time things. And that got me thinking about what we could ask as a competition question. So we've got some mugs to give away from our sponsors, The Terrace. Some Forest-themed mugs. And it just got me asking the question, Thiago Silva's 37. So I want to ask you, how old was Des Walker when he made his last ever appearance for Nottingham Forest? So how old was Des Walker when he made his last Forest appearance? So you need to email your answer to forestramble, that's all one word, forestramble@gmail.com. And the closing date for this competition is 6 p.m. on Friday, the 1st of April. And over the weekend, we will contact our lucky winners. OK, so that takes us to the end of this podcast. Stephen, we've got some obviously big matches which are coming up. 10 matches to go. We've got an away match at Blackpool followed by a couple of home games. What are your hopes and your thoughts as we go into this last stretch?
I just hope that we carry on playing the way that we have been and we're picking up points at the rate that we have been as well. If we do that, we've got every chance of getting into the top six, and teams around us will be playing each other and taking points off one another. So all we can do is keep up the performance levels. Hopefully the results come with that, and we can be in that top six at the end of the season.
Okay. Tom, top six, top two, what are you going for?
Top six. With the games in hand and players coming back, I'd say fourth.
Okay. And Baz, just to come to you, points in the bag are better than games in hand, aren't they? But we do seem really quite confident, don't we?
If we can get the momentum, then yeah, top two would be lovely, because then we don't have to deal with the blooming playoffs. But again, speaking of momentum, there's always that one team right at the end that builds up this head of steam and then powers through. And I'd like that to be us. Maybe this little bit with the injuries, we'll have a little, maybe a slowdown possibly, and then go for it towards the end of the season, because it's all about getting your momentum at the right time.
And when you talk about that idea about teams who kind of power on through, then actually in that respect, you think about it, the matches against Coventry and Luton and maybe even West Brom as well, those could be very interesting ones, because they are potentially six pointers for the teams who are vying for those playoff places. Yeah, yeah. But as I said, let's go for the jugular and let's hope that the away match at Bournemouth on the 3rd of May is a six-pointer to try and get second place in the league. We're going to leave it there. We want to say thank you very much to Stephen Toplis, to Tom Newton, to Baz. We want to say thank you also to Jeremy Davis. And also a big thank you to Stuart Levy from the 21 from 21 podcast for joining us and sharing his thoughts. Remember, our competition closes on the 1st of April at 6 p.m. Email forestramble@gmail.com and we'll be back with more match reports very soon. And also a big thank you to... I've lost his name.
Sports Social Podcast Network.